Hello, I'm John Ellis, and welcome to episode 19 of Pitodry PS, the predominantly Dons-based podcast featuring not just the Dons first team, but look across the age groups and genders at the club. And we focus on the respective progress of Cove and Peterhead too, as well as the North East local representatives in the Highland League and juniors. And not just football, but any sport making headlines in the North East of Scotland or featuring someone from the North East of Scotland. Joining me for this journey, as always, Dave McDermott and Andrew Shiney. So here we are recording this episode in the morning of Tuesday, 14th December. Excited for Santa and giddy with another win. This time 1-0 away to St Johnson, and Don's boss Stephen Glass pleased with that victory.
I think first half we were good and moved around really well on a difficult pitch. Second half it really became a game. I think they had some really good opportunities. Not really clear cut, but they had a lot of opportunities and a lot of threats. But I think the game was crying out for a bit of quality, and Teddy gave it. I've not seen it back. The way that you can all take reactions off players. I think the way their players reacted, that there's a high probability as a handball without even seeing it. But I think, I don't know if the ref's seen it or decided it's not handball. So I think the moment of quality for Teddy's the bit that I'm seeing, because I've seen the finish and it was fantastic.
Just to clarify the St Johnson player viewpoint, their manager, Callum Davidson.
Still think it's a handball. Even from my first reaction, I actually think the free kick given was not a free kick either. You know, so really hard to take. I think the referees for this season for us haven't really gone away. There's probably three or four handballs that have led to goals. Hearts game, Hibs game penalty. That game today basically cost us points. Which you look at league tables really tight. I think it's really important you get those decisions right. Whether all four officials have got to make that decision or they've got to get help from something else like VAR. You know, so it's a crucial time in the game. I thought we were excellent second half. You know, I asked the players today to go out and play with a bit of freedom, a bit of energy, a bit of enthusiasm. And I thought they did that, especially second half. I thought first half was even. And I thought second half, we started to dominate. I think Chris had a hit the post just before it. And to lose that way is pretty hard to take.
Back with Stephen Glass, stressing the importance of coming away from the game with a victory.
Any time you win games, you jump the table pretty quick. So it's important. Now the next thing is Hibs away. So that's what we focus on next. But we're happy. I'm delighted for the rewards that the players have got as well. It's easy, said before the game, it's easy to come here, not be at it and get beat. Because St Johnson are a good team. Callum's obviously got them fighting. And they're in a difficult spell at the minute. But you know it's tough here. And I think a lot of teams will come here and not win.
And so to on loan Teddy Jenks, entering the match for the second time in as many games as a sub for J. Emmanuel Thomas. Against St Mirren, he was hugely influential, this time out versus the other Saints, rewarded with his goal.
Very happy with it. Another win, which is the most important thing. But yeah, couldn't be happier. As when I'm chipping in as well with goals, it's much better. So yeah, winning games like these, it's the games that we've been losing at the start of the season and we haven't been doing too well in. So to come out here with a scrappy win, but a win is really important for the squad. We've had good performances for a while, just the results haven't been coming in. But now that's the third on the bounce, the squad's really picking up some momentum and hopefully we can just push on and keep winning.
Come on then, Teddy. Was that a handball?
I haven't seen it back. Nah. I don't remember too much. I just remember it dropping at my feet and then hitting it away, celebrating with the fans. I can't remember too much about it, yeah.
And if ever there was a sign we've, fingers crossed, turned a corner, that was maybe it, because that handball is exactly the sort of thing that goes against you when you're backs to the wall and really struggling and scrapping away. And it just seems you've got all the bad luck in the world. Believe us, we're past masters of the concept. A 1-0 away win, that massive stroke of good fortune followed immediately by a strike fit to win the game. Not quite winning ugly, but certainly with a bit of grit in there, Andrew. What was your impression of the match?
I think winning ugly was the best description of it because, as usual at McDermott Park, there was precious little football on offer for the connoisseurs of the beautiful game, but Aberdeen dug deep. They played the better football in the first half without creating anything really clear-cut. There was that header from Lewis Ferguson that clipped the post from a corner. Prior to that, Jett's header that forced a decent save from Xander Clark, but it was a game of very few chances. And then into the second half, you realised there would have to be some sort of response from St Johnston because they were very passive in that first half, although playing in their usual rigid formation of just, you know, not leaving any space at all for anyone who couldn't thread a ball through the eye of the needle, like Jett was doing. There was a lot of times that Jett was playing passes and you're thinking, who's that for? And then all of a sudden you'd realise, oh, there's a red shirt in space there. How did you spot that? Because it's like a traffic jam when you get onto the ball at Perth. There's a blue wall faces you, but he was doing that well. But unfortunately, apart from a couple of Johnny Hayes crosses, there wasn't a huge threat from Aberdeen. There wasn't a lot coming down the right-hand side. But then in the second half, as I say, a bit of a change from St Johnstone. They were a wee bit more forward-thinking. But again, didn't really threaten. Yes, Chris Kane's header hit the post, but that was their only serious attempt in goal. And then came the goal. And from my viewpoint up the back of the stand, I was on the blind side, as was the referee Greg Aitken of Teddy Jenks when the ball came down. But you could tell from the reaction of the St Johnstone players that there was something slightly nefarious about the way he controlled it. But fair play to Jenks. He played to the whistle. That's what you're taught to do from the very youngest age when you're playing football. He played to the whistle, and take nothing away from the strike. It was an excellent strike because Xander Clark's a decent goalkeeper. He's a big goalkeeper, and he beat him well down to his bottom corner. You can ask the questions afterwards of the officials, why did you not see it? But I thought Aberdeen saw the game out quite well. There was one or two agricultural clearances. There was one from Lewis Ferguson in particular, and the ball came to him in the middle of the park. He just turned around and aimed at the main stand and just absolutely blutered it. And you thought, that's a wee bit like, you know, rugby guys, just, you know, get it out of the park.
Kicking for touch.
Kicking for touch, kicking for as far away from your goal as you can possibly get it. But in the end of the day, a great 3 points, and it lifts Aberdeen up the table. And then allied with the results elsewhere, it gives you that little bit of breathing space in the top six. With Hibs still shedding points like confetti, they can't catch us even if they win their game in hand. So we're in the top six prior to going down to Easter Road in a week and a bit's time. So it was a good day's work for Aberdeen, but not pretty on the eye.
Yeah, I take it you agree with that, broadly speaking, Dave?
Yeah, good impersonation of Arsene Wenger there from Andrew that didn't see anything. it was a handball, no doubt about it. But we deserved the luck that quite often doesn't go our way. And if you remember, I did predict 1-0 Aberdeen last week.
I was just wondering when that was going to come up.
Very quickly. It doesn't happen that often. So, it was an awful game of football in the main. St Johnstone very rarely or anything else, and for them now sitting at the bottom of the table, Harvey in the background there, Callum Davidson is starting to I wonder if he's thinking again, should he have gone more strongly for the pressing job that he didn't get, because football's an unforgiving business, as we know, and despite the fact he's going to be down in the history books for Saints as being a legend, he will run out of time if things don't turn around because it's football.
Yeah, I mean, just a word in St John's, and we'll come back to the game in a second. We were perhaps touting the likes of Callum Davidson this time last week as an outside shot for the now vacant Hibs job, given the work he's done and the success he's had in Perth. And in the space of that week, his players find themselves bottom of the Premiership, and he's ruining the short-term memories of his own supporters in pre-match interviews. Dare I suggest he looks to the Stephen Glass handbook as an immediate example, down there a few weeks back, not rock bottom, but headed that direction, and not playing all that badly, just missing out in the vital moments. Is it a case of keep plugging away for St Johnstone? Because there really wasn't an awful lot in it, was there?
No, there's a very fine line between success and failure. And Aberdeen are the prime example of that. Three successive defeats flipped in completely in its head, three successive victories. That's the way this season is going. And
for everybody, pretty much.
For everyone, absolutely. Maybe apart from the top two who tend to have longer winning runs and then, but their blips get magnified out of all proportion by the media, etc. But I think Callum is a savvy enough guy. He's not someone that will press the panic button. They're a very stable club, St Johnstone. Steve Brown, the chairman. I was actually speaking to Charlie Fraser, their vice chairman. Charlie's an old friend from way back in Aberdeen, and I didn't realise he was the vice chairman when I was standing blethering to him. I should have maybe shown a wee bit more deference when I said, it's always awful when you come here. in terms of football. And he's going, well, we've had some success. And I'm going, aye, but what's it a cost of spectators, Charlie? Come on. But St Johnstone's biggest problem is they can't score goals. You know, you look at the league table and you see them, they've played 16 games, they've scored 9 goals. They've scored 2 goals away from home in 7 games. They've only conceded 4. So, you know, away from home, St Johnstone are not a pretty watch. You don't go to watch St Johnstone away from home expecting a goal glut. But they've got enough decent players there that they'll turn things around. And it's just they're going through their bad spell just now. But it's how quickly you can get out of it and how well you do when you do get out of it that will determine, you know, the ultimate fate. But I don't think St Johnstone should be overly worried at this point. In a month's time or 6 weeks' time, come the end of January, if they're still down there and if there's a gap starting to grow, then yes, you might have to worry a wee bit, but I don't see it.
Okay, back to us. Let's take a look at the goal scorer, Teddy Jenks. He spent that last couple of games coming off the bench for Jet, who seems to have sort of a good 60 minutes in him and then a very sharp fade at 60 if he's on for 90. Teddy came on against St Mirren, made a big impact in the game, rolling that ball across the face of the goal for Ramirez to get in on the end of. This time nabbing his goal. And so handball aside, when it dropped for him, he took it really well. Placement and power, it's all you can ask for in a shot, really. Let me ask you this, though, Dave. Is he destined for that sort of, you know, John Hewitt super sub tag because of the impact he makes when he comes on? Or has he earned a starting spot yet at the expense of Jet, maybe?
It's a difficult one, and it's a great problem for Stephen to have because Jet will give you a limited period, but he's never going to, or very rarely going to, last the full 90. Teddy Jenks will not want to be, nobody wants to be remembered as a super sub. You know, I'm sure even David Fairclough didn't like the tag because players want to start. And I do think he's deserving of a start. He's always impressed me when he's come on, but it's where you fit him in. And at the moment, Stephen's got a consistency of selection that he won't particularly want to change. Obviously, we've got players coming back from injury, but it is a tricky one. I hope not, but it's a squad game. So, you know, the squad of 18, 19 players are hopefully all going to get their chance. It's a busy period right now, although no game this weekend because of the League Cup final. But January, February, that's when suspensions and injuries do tend to come into things. So you would think that all of the squad will be required going forward. But no, I like Jenks, and he's got aspirations of following James Maddison. And if he ends up as half as good as Maddison has turned out, then brilliant.
Yeah. From what I could gather, the one thing you can always say about this type of game, Andrew, Scott Brown had a hallmark kind of Scott Brown afternoon, doing all that stuff, you know, the black arts, which drove us crazy for so many years, which we're now quite happy to turn a blind eye to, or in some cases even applaud. We're probably not setting a good example, but that's what he was about on Saturday, wasn't it?
Absolutely. You saw him with a big grin in his face at sort of every breakdown in play. He was always in at Greg Aiken, making sure that the Aberdeen point of view was forcibly impressed on the referee. He was absolutely in his element on Saturday. It was a dirty kind of day. It's not an easy pitch to play on. It was an absolute battle of a game of football. And Scott Brown, you know, it was the usual when we were there early. And of course, the players arrive at 1:30 off their 3 buses, incidentally, because of the COVID restrictions and all the rest. 3 buses, one of them a double-decker, took the Aberdeen squad down, plus a fleet of cars and things like that. But everybody comes out. I got a wave from somebody. I wasn't sure who it was because he had a great big hood on, a hoodie on top of that, hooded jacket on, you know, coming onto the pitch, really huddled up. Then out struts Bruni. T-shirt, short sleeves. He did have tracksuit bottoms on, so he must have been feeling the cold. But you just thought, there he is. There's the warrior, all ready for the battle. And from first whistle to last, he was there leading his troops. And his example is something for the rest of the team to follow. And I think we're seeing it. You know, it's a real team unit now. You were talking with Dave about Jet and how he fits in. I think it's horses for courses. Stephen, I think, got his substitution bang on because Jet did play really well. He was able to hold the ball up. He was able to find players in space. But when it started to become a real battle in the second half, and you were looking almost a little bit more to be playing on the break, you were looking for a midfielder to go beyond your striker, Jenks can do that. And in the end of the day, Jenks comes on, gets the winner. Stephen Glass, tactical genius.
Yeah, it's the second time in as many weeks, as I say, he's come on in basically 60 minutes. But that's what you want from Jet. You want Jet to be that player that you know, can see that pass that you were talking about earlier, Andrew. That, I mean, even you couldn't see it sitting in the stand, and he's managed to pick out a route, a path towards goal where a player is going to run into. He's got great vision, and if he's only got that for 60 minutes, sooner take that than him, you know, trying to hang in for 90.
Yeah, and you know, if you're only going to have the guy on for an hour, make it an hour that he is an influence.
Yeah.
There's no point in having him on there and thinking, "But is Jet there?" I think we're getting things right. We've got to make a change for Hibs because Ross McCrory is suspended. But you've got Declan Gallagher, who was fit enough to be in the bench again. So he's had another week of training. He'll have had another 2.5 weeks of training under his belt by the time that Hibs game comes around. Jack McKenzie was back, fit enough to be in the bench. He'll be buoyed up by having signed a new contract that ties him to the club till 2025. Things are starting to fall into place. Easter Road's not the easiest place to go to, but Hibs, you know, it's a funny conundrum. Hibs are either going to be going into that game off the back of having won a trophy, high as kites, or they could have suffered a demoralising defeat at the hands of Celtic in the League Cup on Sunday. Will they have a new manager in place? There's so many ifs, buts and maybes around Hibs that I just don't fancy them. Aberdeen, I don't think will go down there gung-ho and go, you know, all-out attack against Hibernian, but I do think they've got a great chance of more, certainly coming away with at least a point, but probably more than that.
Yeah, I mean, halftime on Saturday, I thought, you know what, I'd take a 0-0.
I'll tell you, 80 minutes into the game, Paul Patton come to me and we said the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, you want to preserve that sort of, you know, that streak where you don't lose. Even if it's a 0-0, you come away and you get 1 point, that would do. For Stephen Glass and the Dons next, as Andrew says, they must find themselves wanting that game now. But in reality, they got a week and then a bit to face Hibs away. They clawed back some form of dignity, Hibs, I guess, against St Mirren at the weekend. A late Joe Shaughnessy goal rescuing a point for St Mirren. For Hibs, before us, that League Cup final to look forward to, as Andrew says, you kind of hope they don't find a manager in the intervening period as well, and they're still thick in the midst of a crisis when we visit Easter Road a week tomorrow. Do you think they'll get a manager in that time?
I think they'll be trying to. Wouldn't it be ironic if Derek is the new Hibs manager and his first competitive league match is against the Dons? But no, Hibs can go one of two ways, and their fans are obviously pretty upset about the current form. If they go down without a fight in the League Cup final, the fans, they'll be down. The fans, even if they win, we've seen. Going right back to a time that Andrew would remember when Thistle won the League Cup final against Celtic at Hampden by 4-1 the following week. They'd been so out on the tiles the whole week that they got absolutely gubbed 7-2 up at Pittodrie by Aberdeen when Willie Young scored a spectacular own goal. So, you know, winning, you know, I know they're a lot more professional these days, but they're still, I remember back when we won the League Cup in 2014.
We lost the next league game.
Yeah, well, also, I know how long the celebrations went on. So, you know, it's, even in the modern times, it's difficult one to predict, like so many, like all the games this year seem to be.
Yeah. I mean, there's the thing with Hibs as well. They are a team that managed to knock Rangers out of the semi-final at 3-0. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even a in off a butt cheek. It was a 3-0 win.
And I think it was
3-1. And there were three goals to the good in the first half, weren't they?
Yeah, 3-0 up after about 30-odd minutes.
And they absolutely blew Rangers away that day.
Yeah. Any positives, Andrew, to be drawn from that slightly extended break between games? I mean, another chance for those pushing back from injury to perhaps make it at least for selection. You mentioned Declan. Jack was on the bench as well. Anyone else that's in that category that could be in contention for the Hibs game when it comes round?
Well, Calvin Ramsey can't be all that far away now. He's missed a good number of games. I mean, it was the Hibs game at Pittodrie that he picked up the injury. So that was way back. Let me just check my calendar. It was on the 23rd of October. So that's 2 months almost to the day. So I think, you know, because of the fact that we're going into the back of this off three straight wins, Stephen isn't going to feel I've got to change things around. You know, it's not like we've lost half a dozen in the spin where he's desperately trying to find a winning formula. So I don't think we'll see an awful lot of change other than, as I say, the enforced one of Ross McCrory missing out. Michael Devlin, I saw him at McDermott Park on Saturday, unfortunately on crutches, but it was because he's had a clean-up operation. He had a metal plate as a result of a previous op that was being removed, and he's quite confident that this clean-up will have done a power of good and that his spell on crutches will be very short, and that hopefully, I think they said at the AGM last night, in the next 6 weeks, he should be back fully fit again. It's just another, you know, ace in the park, really, for Aberdeen. But I don't see a lot of changes ahead of the Hibs game.
I'm going to bring the Michael Devlin thing up again in a second because we'll get on to the January window in just a minute. But let's go, before that, let's go for a score predictor for that Hibs game. A little bit in the distance, I know. Hibs versus Aberdeen, a week tomorrow as we record this. Dave, what do you think it's going to be like?
I'm going to go 2-0. Aberdeen. That's just a total stab in the dark because so much will depend on what happens at the weekend for Hibs and how they react to whatever happens.
And Andrew?
I think Dave says 2-0. Wow. I think it will be a little bit tighter. I'll say we're going to play really well defensively and I'll sneak it 1-0.
Okay.
So we've gone the opposite way as we did from what we did last. You were the one, the expansive one, going 2-0 last week.
Yeah, against St Johnstone. Just a word on the January window, because it is coming around ever quicker. And I noticed when Stephen was asked about it at the weekend, first and foremost, he spoke about sort of our power to withstand offers coming in, as opposed to being, you know, the predatory club looking to sign someone. One possibly follows the other in our instance. A lot of personnel arriving in the summer. So will January be a case of trying to hold on to our assets instead of a whole heap more being added to the squad, Dave?
Yeah, excuse me, I think so. I also think the loan players some of them will disappear, excuse me. And of course, I didn't bring a glass of water with me. but I think, you know, Ramsey, Lewis Ferguson, you know, are players that will be attracting interest. You know, great piece of business, getting Jack McKenzie signed on the extension before the transfer window. So that kind of rules him out unless it's a multi-million pound bid. But it's important that we do hang on to our most saleable assets. And the two that spring to mind are Lewis Ferguson and Calvin Ramsey.
Yeah, and I don't know how long Calvin Ramsey's got on his contract, but Lewis Ferguson at least is signed until, I think, 2024, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, it's 2024. And Calvin, if I remember rightly, signed an extension to his contract as well.
Yeah.
So these players will, you know, require a fee from clubs down south or abroad if they want to sign them. I think, again, from things that I've read about the AGM last night, Stephen Gunn said they want any business done early in the window. They don't want it to be, you know, leaving everything to the last minute and a mad panic on the 31st of January. So I hope that there's not a lot of movement. Ryan Hedges is another one who is possibly going to go. He would definitely need replacing. There's no getting away from that. I think Fergie, you know, you do have other central midfielders of a similar type that could possibly fill the breach. Dylan McGeoch, Dean Campbell. And Teddy Jenks, if he stays, he could play that role as well, the box-to-box midfielder.
Yeah.
But I don't foresee an extension of Marty Longstaff's deal from Newcastle. I think he'll be back down the road and heading to some other club other than Newcastle again and alone because of his contract situation. But it's always a slightly worrying time, isn't it, the transfer window, because you don't want to lose your best players. But if you can get the business done early, at least you've got time to sort of fill gaps. This leaving everything to the very last minute, which happened last year, remember, Sam Cosgrove going away.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, we've got no strikers. And we brought in Callum Hendry, Flo Camberi, and Fraser Hornby was the other one. And really, with the exception of Callum Hendry, none of them gave us very much at all. So you don't want to leave it to the last minute. It's always a risky business.
Just wanted to bring back a name you mentioned a moment or two ago there, Michael Devlin. Now, from what I remember about his contract, was he not on, was it a six-month contract to take him through to January to establish his fitness and obviously his worth? I think that was what he was on. So if he's 6 weeks away from being fit, do you reckon they'll extend that to the end of the season?
I think they probably will do. I don't think they want to cut their losses. They've invested too much in Michael to cut their losses at this point. So, yes, I think it'll be a case of keep him there until he's fit, because he is an excellent player. He's only 28, I think, so he's got a lot of good years ahead of him. And, of course, we've got to remember Andy Considine will be fit early into the new year, we hope. So that's like getting another new player in there. So I think Michael will still be an Aberdeen player come May.
I hope so. I mean, nothing would make me happier than for him to make a successful comeback, because I remember not that long ago when we were doing, I think it was a pre-season and we were abroad, and he was talking to Red TV. And I remember saying to you guys at the time, he speaks like a future captain. And he has that about him. He has that sort of influence about him as well. If we could just get him playing and consistently, there's still that opportunity ahead of him, I think, Andrew.
There is. As I say, he's just coming into the prime years as a player. He's a very level-headed, he's a very switched-on character. And as you say, he's got great leadership qualities. He was captain at Hamilton Accies for a good number of years. He's just been dogged with ill luck in terms of injuries. And if it meant that operation that I mentioned that he had, saw him in crutches on Saturday, if that has cleaned things up and allowed him to move forward, hopefully with a clean bill of health, so much the better, because he's a good asset, both on and off the pitch.
Yeah, that would be fantastic if that's the case. Now, let's get on to the under-18s. Another postponement. They were due to play Kilmarnock on Friday past. That got called off just like the game against Dundee United the week before. So what's next for the young lads, Andrew?
Pass. I've had no information at all about any game this week. So it may well be the case that there's nothing in the pipeline until January.
Yeah.
I think they must have thought, oh, the guys are doing Pittodrie PS on a Thursday now, because it was Thursday almost at the same time as we were recording that through, bing, in comes the message, the game's off tomorrow. So it's unfortunate, but I think we did mention last week the youth draw. They're away to Rangers in the quarterfinals. So I dare say we'll play possibly some of the guys that played against Cove in the Challenge Cup. Plus, Rangers are playing in the UEFA Champions League, Youth League, and doing pretty well in it by all accounts. So it'll be a tough task for the young dogs, but certainly not one that they'll be worried about, because they've more than held their own against Rangers a couple of times in the league this season.
Better news for the AFC women's team after seven losses in a row and a few spare weeks because of cup finals and weather postponements. They finally got back in the park on Sunday afternoon and managed to beat Hamilton Accies 2-1 with a Bailey Hutchison double for the Dons. And all of a sudden, a bit like their male counterparts, the women find themselves inside the top six or in fifth position. Okay, a bit of a gap between themselves and the teams directly above them, especially the top three, but a far better mood as we approach the end of the year, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one that they really had to win, and delighted for them. And it looked as though they were going to keep a clean sheet as well, but Hamilton got one back late on. But coming at the time with the break now upon us, they go into that wee break, you know, on a high, as opposed to, as we all know from bitter experience going into international break after a defeat are not the best. So, no, I think they're where probably realistically they would expect to be, although they're obviously they want to aim for as high as possible. But hopefully a strong second half of the season, and the team, you know, will be settling that top half of the league. And locked in.
Yep, on to Cove Rangers, whose good form continued into the Scottish Cup third round replay against Queen of the South at Palmerston on Tuesday, just after we'd recorded. They won that 3-0 to set up a tie against Hibs at Easter Road, then back to league business and away tie at Falkirk on Saturday. Cove, 3 points clear at the top going into that one, and another win at Falkirk on Saturday, 3-0 away. Goals from Morgan Neal, Rory McAllister, and another late strike from Leighton McIntosh, enough to seal all 3 points and maintain that 3-point lead over Montrose at the top of League One. Next up, back at Balmoral Stadium as Cove host Alloa, that one on Saturday at 3 p.m. When Cove look back upon their year so far, they've got to be pretty pleased as well, Dave.
Absolutely, and their recent form has been outstanding at both ends of the pitch. They're not conceding and they're scoring goals. They're at the top on merit. The only downside was the sending off of late on of Shea Logan for apparently giving a gesture to the Falkirk fans, who no doubt had given Shea dogs abuse for 90 minutes, but they're allowed to do that. If you do anything back, you pay the consequences. So,
it's interesting, Dave. I was speaking to Charlie Allen and to Duncan Little yesterday, and yes, you're absolutely right. He was getting untold abuse, the sort of stuff that if it was out in the streets, you would be lifted for it. And at the end of the game, he turned around and he'd shown three fingers to the Falkirk fans to signify 3-0. So shut up, you know, we're gubbing you. And the assistant referee said to the ref, he made an offensive gesture, a two-finger gesture. Falkirk fans, decent Falkirk fans in the stand, the Falkirk club themselves said, no, it was three fingers. But there, here's another case where a referee takes the word of an assistant who hasn't seen something properly. It's like the Funso Ojo thing, where the assistant referee had said to Bobby Madden, he pushed the fan. You know, it's getting stupid. I mean,
straight red, Andrew, so they can appeal.
They can appeal it, yes. So yeah, I think they're gathering. I don't think they've got any, you know, still photographs or video footage that absolutely shows the thing. But I think they're gathering evidence from Falkirk to try and back up an appeal.
Well, thank goodness it wasn't 2-0.
I was
going to say it kind of depends how you signify three, doesn't it? I mean, if you use one hand or two. Yeah, well, good luck, Shea, getting that one rescinded. And in the meantime, I wouldn't have thought he's depending too much on any plumbing work from the Central Belt. Anyway, Peterhead went into the weekend to the fixtures, 18 points from 16 matches played in seventh spot in the league table, and hosted rock bottom East Fife. A goal from on loan Don Ryan Duncan earning them a share of the spoils, and in the end, Natalie missing out in the win. Peterhead, though, dropping one place as a result of that, now in eighth and heading to ninth place Dumbarton next weekend. It's these games they've got to try and pick up points, though, isn't it, Andrew? I mean, they'll look on that as a couple dropped at the weekend. If they're going to ensure their safety in this league, then they need to be winning matches against those teams around them in the table.
Yeah, but as we've said in virtually every episode of Pataudry PS, how do you predict matches, particularly in League One? Because everyone is capable of turning over their opponent, regardless of their league position. But I thought it was great to see that Ryan Duncan came on and within virtually 10 minutes had scored his first senior goal. I've seen Ryan playing a lot for Aberdeen's under-18s this season, an exciting talent. And I think if they can get him on the pitch for 90 minutes and really firing, he could be the catalyst to just push them forward because they're another of these sides that aren't exactly free-flowing and scoring lots of goals. They don't give a lot away at the back, but if you can get somebody like Ryan Duncan, a six-foot winger who comes predominantly left-sided, but who comes in off the right wing and is never scared to have a go at goal, he could be a real asset to them. It's so tight that I don't think Jim McAnally will be overly concerned. But yes, on paper, it looks like 2 points dropped. But, you know, every point's a prisoner in League One, yeah. Unless you're Cove, where it seems 3 points is just a given every week.
Yeah. For the Highland League teams, a fixture list which happened to see all the Fs together, but definitely not weekend of F all happening. Fraserburgh put 12 past Fort William. Yes, 12. That's two of the Fs and a few more in the visitors' dressing room, you'd imagine. As things turn a little bit tighter at the top of the table, those, this is not a sentence I thought would utter, those 12 goals could be absolutely crucial for Fraserburgh later in the season. In the other all-F fixture, Fermanagh United secured a 1-0 away win at Forest Mechanics. Bucky moved into second with a 2-0 victory over Turriff. Deverin Vale lost by the odd goal in 9 at home to Nairn County. Inverurie Locos defeated Lossie by 5-2, and Wick Academy saw off Strathspey Thistle 1-0. Huntley versus Clack, Keith versus Brechin City, and Rothes against Brewer Rangers all postponed. And the juniors, Dave?
Yeah, half a dozen games postponed in the juniors, and Bridgeton Thistle took advantage of Cooter's inactivity to go top of the Super League table. They won 1-0 at Hermes, thanks to David Booth's second half strike. And Hermes, a very, very difficult place to go and get a result. Bank City, ominously, having played quite a few games less, they move into third after a 5-0 win at East End. In the First Division, Stonywood Park Vale, the leaders, defeated bottom club Aberdeen University 6-0. And in Division 2, Newmarket United's promotion hopes took a bit of a dent when they went down 2-1 at Cruden Bay. And Forest Thistle, who are now second behind Rothley Rovers, they defeated Isle of Vale 2-0 at home.
A couple of other bits of business before we sign off for today. The first of those, local bowling, Dave.
Yeah, Jason Banks, who you may remember we heard from a few weeks ago, well, he was awarded the Scottish Indoor Bowling Association's Gents Young Player of the Year at a ceremony down south. And in this month's Taylor Bowls National Singles Finals, Jason and his father, Colin, won the two bowl pairs for the second time, defeating Ronnie Duncan and Colin Walker in the final. And Jason almost came up trumps in the Gents National Singles Final. He lost 21-19 to Michael Stepney, who comes from Elgin. So a good month for our Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, before we go, we want to make you aware of another of Andrew and Dave's amazing products. Red Rewind is back for season 2, where the guys catch up with people connected with the club from over the years and get them to share their Don's story in each podcast episode. Is that a fair summation, Andrew?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, we've got a nice variety and range of guests in season 2, going right back to the Tommy Pearson era with Jim White and up almost to the present day with Stuart Duff, who's part of the coaching staff out at the academy. So, yeah, it's always fascinating listening to these guys. And hearing, I think, Dave, as much how the game and preparations for the game and being a footballer has changed in the decades.
Totally changed. And also, the common thing is from the players of the past is they don't like the current way of playing. That'd be fair, Andrew. They don't like the sideways passing that goes on and, you know, possession-based. You know, they're very much of the opinion, get the ball up the park and get it into...
I particularly enjoyed in season 1, I think it was Jim Leighton, talking about, you know, well, we kind of played straightforward football and, you know, you don't see anyone complaining about my team of that either. And I thought, yeah, fair point, Jim. You know, it sometimes went from back to front and that was, you know, nobody did complain about it. The clip that we're going to hear, Dave, tell me about that.
Yeah, first of all, it would also say that Jim Leighton was never one that was going to be playing it from the back.
There have been so many heart attacks at the every week when Jim's got the ball at his feet. What's he going to do? It was anyhow.
But you get the point. There could be two passes, goal.
The first episode of season 2 features Willie Garner, former Don's assistant manager and centre-half, and it's out next Monday, the 20th. And this clip is Willie describing his first team debut for the Dons. And of course, he needs his memory to be jogged by our very own Staton.
Eddie Thompson was playing at the time. Obviously, Willie had left. Willie Miller had moved back to play in that position as well. And Eddie had got hurt. And I got thrown in. I can't remember who I played, made my debut. Was it Hearts?
It was Hearts. 3-3 draw.
Yeah.
Geoghegan, Williamson, McClelland, Smith, Garner, Miller, Scott, Rob, Jarvie, McMaster and Graham.
Wow. Not a bad team.
And Ian Hearn and Billy Perry came on as subs.
Right, and I was probably the youngest boy in that team as well.
Some decent players in that team.
Absolutely.
And Red Rewind, of course, available from all podcast outlets. So Apple, Spotify, wherever you get yours. Just search Red Rewind and it's always good listening. You can listen back to season one as well and subscribe so you get all the episodes going forward. That is pretty much it for episode 19 of Pittodrie PS. We aim to publish every week on a Tuesday if we can. Always looking back to the Don's previous fixtures and ahead to the next. Please remember to follow us on Apple or wherever you get your podcast. If you could rate and review us as well, tell us what you think of the show too. We'd be very grateful. Thanks for checking out Pittodrie PS. We'll see you next time.